and complexity. And a lot of it has to do with scientific knowledge and levels that technology have gone to. And so many people have no idea, A, that it could even exist, or B, even if it did exist, that who would do stuff like that? And I'm constantly seeing examples of stuff. And this is, of course, related to, you know, your work with HAARP and all that different kind of stuff. And I was really hoping, you know, like a lot of people do very major work and make major planetary contributions, but then they move on. They sort of maybe burn out on it, or they don't want to deal with it anymore, or leave it to somebody else. And I was hoping that you haven't got to that point with all that, the geophysical warfare stuff, because, I mean, and I'm asking this as a question, just as a preface before we start talking. To me, there's more of that happening in the world now than ever. But I wanted to run all this by you. But ultimately, I want to thank you for taking this time. And it's ultimately up to you the direction we go and what we talk about. And you're a medical doctor who's oriented towards health, not somebody that goes around doing brain surgery or heart bypasses so you can pay for your yacht. You're actually interested in helping people to be healthy and with leading edge knowledge, and you're involved with the indigenous community, and you're a family guy, and you love nature. So there's really, there's nobody else like you out there.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate all of that. You were asking me about some of that, and I've been doing this now a little over 25 years, and I would say my take on it has changed quite a bit, not in sense of what I've said or what I've reported, because I think time has proven that to be correct, but more on the order of, you know, what do you do with it now? You know, I mean, 25 years later, and you still see sort of the result of it, and it's really late in the game at this point for what I see happening, but not in a bad sense, just in the sense that 5 minutes to midnight.
Very interesting. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, their clock. If you read my emails and stuff, I've used the name The Brink. I began using it as for myself in musical form in 1985, but I've really just for a long time felt that we really are on the brink. And it's not necessarily something bad, but usually see that word in connection with ominous. You know, we're on the brink of disaster, the brink of nuclear war, the brink of the unknown. And you just kind of summed that up with what you said.
Yeah, I mean, and when I look at it, because, you know, in terms of what's been happening globally, and I travel quite a bit, so I see a lot of different places, and it's really the same deal everywhere, just a little different cultural overlay. And, you know, and how far you can go depends largely on the culture you're in, or how you go. I should say better than that, how you go. And, you know, when I look at the bigger picture on it, and I think I said this a long time ago, it's really been the evolution of a technocracy oriented around, obviously, technology, and kind of leaving a lot of people behind in that equation. I don't think that's anything new, really. I just think we give it new names and change a few players, but the actions generally look the same. You know, instead of being the serf on the plantation, so to speak, it's really the same thing. If you think about how people live today and how they function today.
Yes, we're still the same, relative, except for kind of like mutations of our own doing. We're really the same biologically as we've been for a really long time, but it's like the software, the behavioral patterns and stuff that's mutated and changed. But you know, like it's quite ironic that we haven't changed that much biologically, but through whatever different sort of means, cultural evolution and something else that we could talk about later, but the technological advancement has just become, I use the word juggernaut. It's like this off the rail thing. And I even, in the past year or two, I'm a big fan of science fiction. But I really see in the real world, it's like there's a very nebulous boundary between what is science fiction and what's really going on, both in terms of what we know and what people like me don't really know but might suspect, but I even am questioning if some of it does not even now almost have a mind of its own with all the AI and robotics and the supercomputers that seem to be necessary for running all this stuff. I mean, another question I ask is, like, could we actually pull the plug on it all even if we really wanted to?
Probably not. I would say you really can't stop the direction of the technology, but you can recognize it a little bit better. And when I look at it all, when I said that about still being the same, the only difference is we've substituted farming for cubicles, you know, but essentially it's the same deal. And the other thing we've done is we've removed the basic elements of what true economics is and substituted something else that's really artificial. Because economics, if you think about it, used to be based on and is based on four fundamentals. And it's entrepreneurship, labor, capital equipment, which is things that make other things from a shovel to a factory. And then fourthly, land and natural resources. And most people 150 years ago worked in agriculture, which made them utilize all four of those factors and actually have ownership of them. And we've moved away from real stuff to fiat currencies, leased cars, rented homes. Nobody owns a thing, if you think about it, except paper that represents someone else's company called stocks and bonds, and paper representing somebody's promise backed by nothing. And when you look at that and you think about how the culture has changed, that's probably the biggest fundamental, the substitution for true economy with fake economy. And then you can start laying over fake news, fake food, fake everything. I mean, if you really want to, you know, kind of encapsulate it. But then you got to kind of step back and say, for what purpose, you know, and for what comes of that? And it's really, again, goes back to the same equation. Wealth continues to concentrate into fewer hands, although there's a larger distribution of wealth across the globe. And the lifting of, you know, really horrible poverty has changed. But when you look at it from the bigger picture, again, stepping back, it's still gravitating a lot more of the planet's resources to the top. And you think about technology and how it actually is applied, didn't really liberate people.
It enslaved them.
It really created a more of a controlled slave class with a technology on top of it.
Yes. Well, now, let me ask you this. A lot of my work, I'm very connected with the animal and plant kingdom, as are you, I'm pretty sure. And I think that a direct effect of our technological juggernaut and the environmental devastation that we're increasingly wreaking is damaging our larger non-human community in a way that they're not even really figured into the equation of all the social systems and economics and stuff like that. They're like a byproduct or collateral damage or a resource, you know. But if we could hear their voices and how much all the non-human life forms are unable to live their life and pain and suffering and being driven to extinction, you know, do you see that's kind of like going to the next level?
Yeah, you know, I see that from a lot of different perspectives. Firstly, I don't disagree with a better model, a stewardship model, if you will, in terms of how we behave. In realistic terms, looking across the planet with what I see, it's not going to happen in the short run, probably not for a very long time. And as a consequence, the direction we're headed is not going to rapidly shift another direction, I don't think. And when I think about, there does come a point where people kind of wake up, and people don't really remember this, but in 1989 and 90, when things were falling apart in Eastern Europe, primarily starting in the Black Sea region and the Ukraine, it started over environmental issues, because the Black Sea used to support a lot of, I think, 100 and some species of fish, and it was reduced to like 20. Used to have a vibrant, you know, tourist economy, a lot of things, and it was getting wiped out. And that began sort of the beginning of the end. The Danube and its countries in it were dumping, you know, into the Black Sea region. It only circulates every 140 years, so a lot of problems. And that began sort of the hey, what are we doing? Questioning of Eastern Europe that started to shift things around. And I think, yeah, there is a critical mass you reach where people begin to reassess what they're doing. And I think that's kind of happening on a pretty big scale. My concern is the politics that involves the climate change discussion, because it's silencing a lot of voices that unfortunately ought not to be silenced. And when you talk about it, mass extinctions, this isn't the first time. The last time in recent memory was only 12,000 years ago. And in the context of that, you know, cataclysmic change, which I think most would agree today, that are at least reading the literature, you know, when you think about what happened then, it wiped out, you know, every major mammal species, at least in terms of their old form. And when you think about it, again, in the context of climate change, sea levels 12,000 years ago were 350 feet less, right? I mean, so we have 350 feet of sea elevations increases over 12,000 years, which works out to about 3 feet per 100 years, which is the projection for the next 100 on an average. Now, given that early on there's evidence of massive, you know, release of heat or flooding. In fact, some say it was an impact in Greenland that might have triggered, you know, the big melt, and then a super freeze of about 1,000 years, and then back to the big melt again. But all of that kind of makes sense when you look at what happened then. And then when you look at what's happening today, the biggest driver of climate change is, in fact, natural, in my view of the world. And I think the evidence in the next several years will begin to show more of that.
Yes.
Of the politics of it.
Can I ask you something? You're getting right to the heart of exactly one of the main things I wanted to talk about, mainly ask you about, because I run it by so many people. And people are just, I mean, I lose friends because of this. People, I mean, when I look around, like, whenever, I mean, let me throw this out as a question. Ever since I first started hearing them talk about global warming and climate change, A, my background is in science, and I've been following environmental stuff for a really, really long time. You know, when I was living in Boulder, Colorado, I had friends that worked at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and, you know, a leading edge place. And back around 1990, they weren't even talking about global warming or climate change, just maybe barely, but they were talking about the atmospheric big three, which was maybe carbon dioxide accretion, but it wasn't the main single thing. Acid rain, ozone accretion in the troposphere, and ozone depletion in the stratosphere up there where it matters more, and all these things. And I watched over the next decade as the whole global warming thing was marketed, as I saw it, more than any meme has ever been in history. It reminded me, even though I was born in 1956, but I remember, you know, the whole it was a marketing paradigm using the new technology of television, the Cold War, the peaceful atom, right, the Red Scare, and these are sort of like, they're giant public relations memes that, as I believe, they're actually orchestrated by factions of bureaucracy, government. I won't name any specific three-letter organizations, but we all know who we're talking about. But I call them TAOs, Trinary Acronym Organizations, TAOs. And so, you know, they even the big one in particular, they boasted back in the 1950s of a thing called Project Mockingbird, where they wanted to take control, right, of all the mass media in the world. And this was in the 50s. Right. And so, you know what I'm saying? But exactly, you know, we could devote a whole show to that. But this climate change thing has really, to me, been, they've pulled out every trick in the book for this, including, you know, and one thing you actually communicated with me about was I mentioned Aldous Huxley's book, which was a follow-up to Brave New World. It was called Brave New World Revisited, where he went back 10 or 20 years later and looked at how it had all come true and was talking about the actual dynamics of one of the chapters is called Propaganda in a Democratic Society. And it's like a blueprint. I don't think he necessarily was helping the people to do it. But you can see every trick in the book has been used with the climate change thing. And it's, and one of them is just sheer repetition. The mechanical repetition, and it's implanted everywhere. And they'll have a perfectly good article, and right at the end, it tags on the little climate change thing. And so it's the whole mental environment's been saturated with that.
Right. It's like the tagline, alcohol was involved.
Yes.
Criminal event. Well, it is. And here's what they've done in it. It's really sloganing and then they've used the same tactics, if you think about it, in all of the other political issues by using shaming and intimidation and really light forms of manipulation rather than discussions about the relevant facts or allowing discussions. And this is the other thing we're seeing more of is people feel the need to limit people's ability to have a discussion. And I don't care what you're talking about on the planet. Today, in a technological society, if you're offended, and I don't think you have a right not to be, I think you have a kind of a human obligation to be offended in the course of life because life kind of deals it that way. And as a result of that, you have the opportunity in this society to change the channel, which I think is the ultimate freedom of speech on the other end. Not to shut up someone else's ability to say what they want because you don't agree, but that leads us always into a conflict that always leads to less than what we are as human beings. We might not like what someone else says. And I hear a lot of the phrasing in the context of that these days of the phrase, we need to be tolerant. And quite frankly, personally, I don't believe in tolerance as a concept because tolerance to me represents a kind of a self-denial because your tolerance represents the silence of something that you feel. In other words, just shutting down what you think and feel as if it isn't relevant. And that's kind of directing violence towards yourself.
It's dishonest towards yourself.
Maybe the higher order of this. And acceptance means that you look at the other person who you totally disagree with and you accept them as a human being with the right to express themselves in that way. And this is the higher order. Tolerance is a selfish, self-centered thing to relieve guilt and to relieve frustration that doesn't really address the underlying issues that are important, which is why do two divinely created individuals disagree? That's worth finding out. That's worth making an inquiry, and that's worth doing respectfully.
Yes. You touched on something that made me think of the difference between, like, when we speak of a cult, you think of a group of people that have kind of been undergone sort of like a voluntary or involuntary sort of a brainwashing operation, and they sort of, they're not inspired or even allowed to engage in critical thinking. They're required to uncritically assimilate whatever it is that's served up to them, like a little baby having its little spoon, its Gerber, put into its mouth from its mom. And so the cult, and so our mass culture, and coupled with the power of mass media, and people have been also questioned. So many people don't question what's on the news. They assume that if it's on the news on TV, that's got to be true. And I go, but that's the worst possible orientation. You should not really believe any of that stuff. Yet it's got the perception of the authority figure, you know, with the lab coat or the black, the business suit and stuff.
Right. You were talking about Huxley, you know, and I saw a documentary, and it was actually an interview from, I think it was 1956 or 57, it's on YouTube, of Huxley, and I think it was Cronkite was interviewing him. But, you know, it was a major, you know, interview, and it was like way after Brave New World and before Brave New World Revisited, kind of in the middle of that period, but he's contemplating those ideas. And the thing that Huxley said, and really in projecting forward into the world of what was going to come, he would be stunned at what actually did come, because it's so much more than he even imagined. Although what he suggested is profoundly accurate all these years later. And that was about a more directed and controlled society. In fact, you can go back to the work of Zbigniew Brzezinski in the 70s when he was at Columbia University. He wrote Between Two Ages, which deals with the economic, social, and technology aspects of, you know, where the world was going, and when he wrote, you know, kind of a forward view, and it's actually, if you read it today, you'd read it like a history, you know. In fact, it's Between Two Ages, and it's
America's Role in the Technotronic Society.
Yeah, this one, right?
The Technotronic
and,
Era.
And he, you know, when you read it, he writes in a really convoluted language. Most people have a lot of trouble with it just because of the way it is, but if you read it carefully and you contemplate it, he was dead on accurate. And you know, this was kind of the building blocks for what became the Council Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission, groups of business leaders, political leaders, and others that kind of push and shape what happens in the world. And what's happened and was predicted to happen was media would play a large role in this, and it has. The cooperation between big media and governments, whether it's China, India, the United States, or whoever it is, isn't so relevant anymore, because big tech has what government wished they had and now do by virtue of their surrogates in the technological world of big tech. And you look at the Googles, the Facebooks, the YouTubes, who are now restricting speech globally in terms of who they allow on, how they run their software so that when you make inquiries, what you get to see, what you don't get to see, how things trend and how they keep certain things and certain issues from not trending because they don't fit their political dynamic or narrative. And you're going to see more of this coming out in terms of whistleblowers, and it will take groups like Facebook and put them right in the toilet where they belong as people awaken to how violated they actually are. It's like you're digital doorway. Think of your bedroom door being kicked in and everything in your bedroom and your house ransacked by some thief. And that's what's happening with your digital data, which is more profound than what most people ever store in their house. And we warned about it in a book called Earth Rising the Revolution over now almost 20 years ago. And, you know, as I look back what we were saying was coming and what is, and then you go back to the work of Huxley and others, you know, the fact is we were right. What we underestimated is the reaction of the public, because we all thought there would be more, and there hasn't been. And I think that's, you know, when you talk about cult-like behaviors, that's what you're seeing, because they tend to be driven emotionally with not a lot of thinking. And that's kind of what you're seeing if you look around the world right now. A lot of emotional-driven talking, not a lot of dialogue, not a lot of conversation, and certainly not a lot of mutual respect for differing ideas.
Yes, this is so profound. You've just covered, oh my God, there's so many things I want to ask you about, but you mentioned I consider him to be the Mac Daddy of the we've been in the technotronic era for a long time. I think that's a word he made up, but Brzezinski and his protege Gordon J.F. McDonald, back with LBJ and all that, and to me, we really started to see. Because Brzezinski was Obama's top national security advisor for the whole 8 years. And that during the Obama administration is when we really started to see a lot of these, you know, his sort of the Brzezinskian paradigm being rolled out. And one of the scariest things that I really wanted to get onto with you is the ultimate use of these technologies that, like, he didn't mention HARP back then in the 70s because it didn't exist yet, but the idea of a global mind control. I don't know if people talk about weather control. I don't know if control is actually the right word. That might be their goal, but it's more of a sort of like manipulation, or, you know, tweaking or fucking with stuff. You know, we can say that on my radio show, but it's like but one of the scariest things I saw, and I don't know if it was from McDonald or Brzezinski, but the use of properly timed electromagnetic pulses beamed down over an entire hemisphere of people could create cognitive debilitation. Are we seeing something like that?
It was J.F. Gordon MacDonald, and Brzezinski was quoting him, and it was from an earlier book and it was a chapter in a book called How to Wreck Your Environment.
Yes.
The chapter that J.F. Gordon had written and Brzezinski had cited. And what it was the idea that you could electronically stroke the ionosphere and have this effect over large geographic areas. And, you know, technology evolved that would allow you to do this. What I find interesting is how much was understood about these technologies back in the 70s and the 60s, even in the 50s when the science was first evolving. And, you know, but what the general public isn't aware of, and it was the work we did on mind effects, and there's hundreds of source documents kind of show the evolution of the science. But it's simple. The idea of propaganda that Huxley talked about is the simplest. Mm-hmm. That's just the news broadcast. And then you can look at Persinger's work at Laurentian University in the mid-90s, and he suggested you could put a complex signal out into the environment generated from any number of signal-generating sources and broadcast just about any way you can imagine. You could change the general emotional state of large segments of the population, and then with that, do simple things like just the normal news feed going into the television networks to channel, you know, that sense of dis-ease or agitation in a specific direction. Pretty easily accomplished to kind of keep pushing or moving the herd in a direction, and that's really the objective. It's not an idea of convincing everyone. It's a matter of pushing enough to get your point of view or your worldview projected into the world. And here's what they learned in all of this, okay? And this is what gets lost in all of this, because people default to fear and anxiety, and they worry about the Manchurian candidate shooting up a school or whatever the nonsense of the day is. Not to say that those aren't important issues, and not to say that they can't happen that way, but the broader issue is one that these programs address, which dealt with the very nature of human beings and what we are fundamentally. And what these research projects showed the government is that anomalous human potentials, the things that we used to refer to as extrasensory perception or ESP, and in that grouping, telekinesis, telepathy, remote viewing, a whole lot of things fall under that umbrella that were investigated, and every once in a while you see bits of it pop out. But this is the core of the MKUltra programs, of the CIA, the programs operated by the Navy, the Air Force, other military intelligence, DARPA, and many others outside of the United States. And what was discovered was these anomalous human potentials are what governments fear the most, because one or two activated, fully engaged human beings remembering, not evolving, and let me say that again, not evolving, we are already there, remembering what the hell we are as human beings and expressing that in the world is what, in fact, changes the world. They figured that out. What they also figured out is one of the key elements of this is concentrated thought and emotional energy directed at a target. Okay, and let me tell you how that works. There are very unusual people on the planet that can hold their thought for more than a couple of seconds. Most of us can't. Try it. You try and hold a thought, your mind drifts. Everybody's does without really intense discipline. The more you can hold a thought, the more you can push that thought and emotionalize it and create it into reality. It's amount of time held on a specific thought. The other way you can do it is get a million people to hold that thought for 1 second and emotionalize it. And it's like one person holding it for a million seconds.
Wow.
It's a cumulative effect. It's a powerful effect if you can do it. So when media is controlled, when media pushes millions and billions of people into a direction, we then began to create the reality by blending the mind and emotion of millions across the planet in a specific direction. And this is mind control at its essence, and what big media is able to do in shaping culture shaping the reality of the world around us. And what most of us are missing, because we're in the middle of the parade and we're not watching it too.
So you think that you're saying that the powers that be or factions thereof are deliberately trying to channel our own powers of creativity to create a reality that they want?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's scary.
Absolutely.
Well, see, but you mentioned MKUltra. It never got shelved. It just mutates.
No,
and
just moved to different names.
Exactly.
Agencies and different subgroups. They never shelve anything.
No.
And anyone who believes that is living in Naiveville. My family's been involved in government for now 3 generations.
Yes.
At the federal level, in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, at the state level, internationally, locally, it's the same deal. No matter where you are and no matter how you see it, they just change the way the game is played a little bit. It's like, I'll give you a really simple example that in terms of how you get there. In the third world and in many parts of the world, government is controlled by black bags of money being handed off called payoffs and bribes. We all hear about it, read about it, know about it. In the West, we don't do that, theoretically. We do it differently. We have committees, campaign committees and contributions and reports. So we've institutionalized bribery, okay? Because here's what bribery with a brown paper bag full of money gets you in the third world. It gets you access to politicians, a dialogue with a politician, and an outcome from a politician. The exact same thing. A big campaign contribution or a PAC spending millions on your effort to get you elected spend, it gets you access to that politician, a conversation with them, an outcome, something you and I as average people cannot get in most cases. So is it any different? No, we just given it a nice name so we feel better about it within our cultural context. Same game, different words, different little black dots on a piece of paper to describe something so we can feel good about it, or at least not feel as bad about it as we might otherwise feel. In the third world, the idea of someone handing off a bag of money, they must not feel as bad about it as we do in our world, because they accept that as their normal pattern for getting outcomes.
Yes,
it is the same thing.
It's part of our sort of, I'll use the word delusion. I think that if you look at it from a psychiatric perspective, which I was originally going to go into medicine and become a psychiatrist, but my guardian angels shrank me ahead of time and put me on the path of becoming an artist. But I read about a syndrome or a phenomenon called shared delusional systems that occur normally in a family, like say a mother and her daughter, but they'll come to believe through whatever chain of events that something's it's real to them. Like they'll have an imaginary member of their family and they'll talk to them and set a place at the table for him and give him a name, and he's there. And to them, he's real. And who knows if maybe they even see him. But, you know, like, but I think so much of our shared, you know, I use the word reality in quotes, but so much of our shared reality has characteristics of a massive shared delusional system that's enforced or exacerbated or communicated in the disease sense by mass media. And, you know, being an American, or as they call us down under, a Yank, down under, especially, you know, like when the election was happening a few years ago and people kept asking me about Trump. And even before he was installed as the chief entertainment icon, I was going like, but look, who on earth could possibly take any of that seriously? It's a joke. It's a joke. And I wanted to run another idea by you, but people kept going like, oh, but Trump. But look, as far as I can see, that person is just being put in there so that you'll pay attention to him, like a clown or a joker or something it doesn't matter if you love him or hate him, but your attention is on that. It's like the Jerry Springer show. That's what it reminds me of. The whoever's orchestrating the Trump administration also produced the Jerry Springer show, because it's all these like rednecks that want to fight each other, you know, and stuff like that, and pissing people off and focusing on the hair.
It's what America asked for. I mean, they wanted reality politics.
Oh, my God.
And I think also Americans were looking for a radical difference, and Hillary Clinton didn't represent that difference. She represented more of the same, and more of the same in the most corrupt, smelly sort of way. And Donald Trump represented a vulgarity that was at least out front and honest, and I think people voted for honest vulgarity rather than dishonest vulgarity. And really, that was it. And I think Americans wanted a bully for a change.
Let me ask you this. How many American military bases are there in the world?
And
how many countries are there?
The Russians have two outside of their own boundaries.
Yes. And so with all those, NATO is like redundant anyway, isn't it? Because if we're there to protect everybody with our big stick, but against who? And again, it's like you were talking about before, these big corporations, they don't call them transnational for nothing. Like, I read that Lockheed Martin, the world's biggest defense contractor, has more economic clout and power than all but about a dozen and a half governments of countries in the world. And they run cybersecurity for the U.S. government and the Pentagon, and build nuclear missiles and stuff. And then you look at companies like Raytheon, which I deal with them a lot, Raytheon, and because of their work with microwaves and the way that microwaves are actually being used underwater now. But even countries that are supposedly in the pop culture, their enemies, they might have technology by these same companies.
You know, the technology side of it, when you think about big companies and the power of big tech, it's really where it's at. You know, you talk about these guys, you know, big tech, you know, you think about ozone depletion as an example. You know, every time they do a launch, you do what? I mean, you deplete the ozone layer more than anything you can possibly think of. And think of Elon Musk wanting to do commercial carriers, and I mean the whole network of satellite communications, all of it has an impact, but they avoid all that. And when I think about real power in terms of media and why the alliance, because what the governments couldn't do to track every single thing about an individual, now most people just give up freely by bringing their devices into their homes in a way that, hey, man, just turn on the microphone and the camera and let her rip. And all of your data, all of your inquiries, all of your information is cataloged, sorted, and utilized to give you feedback that's designed to manipulate and direct your behavior, whether it's government or commercial interests. And now it's actually both using the same backbone of technology and the same data sources, which is primarily us giving up our information and it not being adequately protected on the internet. And it ought to be as vigorously protected as your doorway in terms of personal privacy, and it is not. And the opposite is happening. And the models that are being developed in China for social scoring, in India for manipulation of digital money, are going to be overlaid over everyone. And they already are in the West in a lot of ways. Digital money is the norm if you stop and think about how people actually transact their business in the West. And likewise, the idea of how we gather our information, our feedback, and sort of how do we shape our cultures. When I travel around the world, you see certain cultures in a really advanced state of this, and others that are headed that way, that are going through those necessary steps to become that directed and controlled society that Brzezinski was talking about, and many others have in our past. And when you ask for what end and purpose, it really is about control. And here's how I see it in the broader context of the world. I don't get upset about the disasters and the traumas, because I know one thing about disaster and trauma. It triggers something in us as humans. that oftentimes allows us to remember a little bit more about what we are and then begin to apply it in the world. And unfortunately, we do it usually, we evolve, if you will, to remember what we are through trauma. And when I see this much in the world, I know that's sort of the flip side of it. When I look at the technologies and what they're trying to do, man always tries to duplicate what nature does. And yet, perhaps we have many of these capacities already, you know. And we, so there, you know, think about technology as an expression of our creativity in one sense, but perhaps there's other ways to get to those same expressions. And this is what I think all of governments that dealt in the mind control areas became disturbed by, is the idea that if individuals became enlightened, awakened, remembered what we are and began to behave that way, all things become revealed in that scenario. And there's a lot of people that have a lot to hide. I think in the midst of all of this, people are awakened, that there is change in the air, and that there will be the flip side of this equation. And I'm hoping it's not a violent one this time. And I don't know that it will be. I think it's, I think we're beyond that. At least I would like to think so. Although power likes conflict, because when you think about it again in a broader context, it gets back to where we started this discussion from, which is the basic fundamentals of economics. And people want to control those fundamentals and substitute something in between. The reason they want to keep, people want to keep conflict in the world is, you know, how do you, when people actually figure it out, how do you collect if you're the bank? You got to keep a conflict. Somebody, you have to have a way to collect. And what you've had is the essence of, the fluid between all of the things of value are controlled by banks and reserve systems. Or the, when you think of the EU and you think of the common union, but the big union is over their currency. This is the important point, is who controls the money supply that regulates what happens with entrepreneurship, with labor, with natural resources, and with capital equipment. It's the guys that control the money supply. And they say that controlling the money supply is important for managing inflation. And the whole theory of economics based on fake money, I think, is wrong fundamentally. I think as long as there's goods and services in the world and more of them than there is money, we have a problem, because we cannot efficiently facilitate trade without a sufficient amount of medium between the four real things of value: entrepreneurship, labor, land and natural resources, and machinery. So when you restrict money supply, you really restrict a potential, human potential. And that's what banks do. And they keep countries sort of at each other's throat, because we now have what are called national debts, where we pay interest to these bankers, which is really odd to me when I think about how we've structured all of this.
It's
a big discussion.
We haven't used the expression New World Order, but that's been around for a while. And a lot of people think when you say New World Order, it's in the, they go like, oh, it's just some conspiracy theory. But I think you've just hit on pretty much exactly what it really is.
Yeah, it's an economic deal. And here's the thing is, again, you know, thinking about groupthink and how you create realities, you know, there's been a lot of human consciousness focused on the idea that someday there'd be a centralized kind of currency that would be digital, that would require access in order to access the economic system. If you can't see that right now in the world, you're blind. They already did it in India. They did facial recognition, iris scans, and fingerprints on 1.1 billion people, and I think they're still getting the last couple hundred million. To have access to anything in India in terms of social systems, they wiped out the 1,000 and 2,000 rupee notes, which were used extensively for bribery, and gave people 30 days to turn them in and explain where they got them or they were worthless. They made digital currencies, other than their own, illegal, and banks illegal to transact in them. They restrict gold trade going in and out of the country, yet they hold some of the biggest gold reserves privately by individuals in the world. But there's a lot of things reshaping on the economic horizon. And one of the things that I would say to look forward to is a counter system emerging that we're already seeing emerge out of the East. And you see the West reaction to it is pretty severe. And at the end of the day, you may see the BRIC form more than the economic bloc you already see. They may actually back their economic bloc by something other than fiat currencies. And that I would not be surprised about as another way of sort of countering the West's weight in the world by bringing people's attention to what value money doesn't have.
Yes, but would you say that where do the Googles and entities like that fit in with this? I mean, are they truly global, aren't they?
They've been co-opted, totally co-opted by government security agencies and by foreign governments for access. They give up the data, they get the markets, and or they don't get in. And so you've got these guys then, the ones who run these companies and many people that work in these companies believing that their political agenda, it's in the public's best interest to make sure their political view is the one narrative that takes the front seat. And so they're preempting people with narratives that are different than their own. And this is dangerous. And their alliance with government, this is dangerous. This is what will yield a directed and controlled society that already has largely manifested on the planet. And personal privacy and data and the way we view data has to change. The data belongs to us individually, and no one should be allowed to keep it. And this is the reality of it, is to start to think about it as your personal diary, and it should be protected. And people who violate that and use your data in ways that are unreasonable ought to be prosecuted criminally. And corporations that do it, their boards of directors should be prosecuted criminally and face jail time and be fully accountable to the world and not insulated by some corporate shield to protect them from criminality when they violate the rights and the fundamental being of other human beings on the planet. And this is what these guys are doing that the average person is failing to recognize. This is kicking in your digital doorway and stomping on you and using your information to manipulate you into doing what you're told. And most people find that when it's laid out kind of clearly like that, a little bit repugnant. And you should, because it's been eased in on the slow boil approach of a little bit at a time. So this generation that is coming up now doesn't even get it. They think the convenience of all this is worth it. But the day your money supply is shut off, or your access to medical care or education is shut off because you're not politically correct enough, you'll think differently. And just because it only happens in China today, on some levels, doesn't mean it's not going to happen everywhere else. Because a lot of people think their view is the view you ought to have. And they can think of all kinds of reasons to rationalize taking your rights away, because after all, it's for your own good. And we've heard that story too many times in too many scenarios to ever accept it as a good idea.
Wow.
The only good idea is free ideas.
Yes, I wrote a satirical article about how Elon Musk was going to invest $600 trillion and buy the entire U.S. military, and he was going to use it to wage war on climate change. Because the only way to get rid of climate change is to get rid of climate. And the only way to get rid of climate is to get rid of the Earth's atmosphere. So he was going to use the U.S. military to destroy the Earth's atmosphere and thereby getting rid of climate change. And then they'd be living on Mars. But I actually, in the beginning of this article, I quote you, paraphrasing what you just said about free and open thought is the key to truly You know, it's pretty much what you just said, you know, that we must have open discussion in order to try to have any hope of actually understanding what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's true. And really, here's kind of my take on it, too. What do I think is important after 25 years of looking at all this? And when I look back on it, the only thing that fundamentally matters ultimately is that people begin to start with a little bit of questioning about what they see, and a little bit deeper inquiry, and a little less acceptance of things that feel uncomfortable, because most of us have an innate intuition. It's that voice within that tells us, and we should begin to listen to that a little bit more, in the sense of, you know, our own internal gauge, and begin to learn how to hear it again and trust it a little bit, and to disconnect from the electronics from time to time. I mean, and as difficult as that might be, it has a profound effect if you can get away from it, even for a little bit. Is what people don't realize today is it's not just the direct interaction with the dialogue, but it's the entire soup that we live within. When you notice it the most, and now in some places of the world we still have power failures where the whole grid shuts down, you know, and when it does, what you'll notice immediately is how quiet it is. And the second thing, because you don't have fan motors and refrigerators, heating systems running, but what you also notice if you stop and think about it for a moment is your whole body kind of relaxes, it sort of contracts, because you're no longer compensating for the really powerful EMFs, electromagnetic fields that surround us in every moment and really overshadow so much of the otherwise very subtle biological energetic interactions that naturally occur. We become disconnected from them. And we also become agitated, and we become slightly anxious. And what you see is it breaks out in all kinds of irrational ways, number one. And number two, what we know is if you can keep people in this sort of low state of agitation or anxiety, you remove a person's ability to reach higher states of consciousness, higher states of awareness, or those levels of brain function that are associated with anomalous human capabilities or our highest performance levels in our waking states. So stress as a contributor to the mess that we're in is probably the biggest single contributor, physiologically, psychologically, and socially. So stress as a contributor is the enemy. Fear is the enemy. Anxiety is the enemy. Culture's solution is medicate those things away but never address the problems. And that's a mistake as well, because the underlying problems require connection of intellect plugged in to what you are as a human being to go push forward and change. And that requires, for lack of a better analogy, a heart and head connection that works. Not just a head connection and not just a heart connection, but both. Not just a left brain and not just a right brain, but both. The way we were intended to function. And this is keys, if you will, to the future, is to get us individually functioning at our optimum. That's what changes the world, and that requires individual work and individuals to commit first to themselves to wake up, and then they might have something to do with helping the rest of the planet wake up. And I think that's where it starts. And after 25 years, that's where I've come to, is all of these technologies exist, and I've spent 25 years and 100,000 articles and books later, and the science proves it. So now what do we do? And fundamentally, it boils back to the same things it's always boiled down to. Individually, we have to make choices. We have to make better choices. We have to make conscious choices and act on those choices. That changes the world fundamentally, and it doesn't start with passing judgment on anyone else but ourselves. And I hear this a lot, is people are so afraid to judge someone else, they make no judgments. I understand what you're saying and what people are saying in that, but here's a way to perhaps look at this. Judge how you're going to interact with the world. Decide how you're going to interact with an individual person based on what your brain is seeing and your heart is telling you. Do that. That's not judging someone else. It's just setting a boundary for yourself and also deciding how your interactions with other people are going to function. And it should be respectful. If you really believe we're divinely created, so most people, at least in most of the traditions of the world, believe even that we're created in the image and likeness of God. And if you believe that, we should behave that way, which means change in the way we see ourselves. Self-correction and recognition is one thing. That's remembering and then changing and choosing free will. Living in it is another thing, and how we define ourselves does.
About 5 minutes ago, you started talking about the when you get away from electricity, like when you go and camping, and the way that you feel it in your body when the electricity goes off and stuff. And I was going to talk about how that's we can thank Tesla for having that, and people worship that dude as God. And I go like, but look, without him, the world would be, we wouldn't have all the, I mean, something else might have happened, but because of alternating current, all these other stuff, none of this would be possible, computers or any of this stuff. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. You're in probably a fairly remote area where you live. I don't know if you're on, are you on grid electricity there?
Where, you know, where I was living pretty remotely, and I was still on the grid. I'm back in the city now, but I have a place that's really remote. It takes a couple of days to walk in if you can do it. And
wow.
And I spent a week out there, about 9 days actually, with the travel time. And, you know, you get back and it's noticeable.
Yes.
You know, my fiance, you know, looks at me and my business partner who was out there with me, and it's like, it's so evident that you have been someplace else.
Yes. Well,
out of the world, just in the way you return into it. And it is, because out there, there's no cell signal.
No.
Nothing in terms of any EMF, unless you're creating it locally.
Yes.
And so you take that layer off. And then you truly do, you know, the phrase is you ground. Well, it actually, you do, you know, I mean, you actually do that. It's not just a saying. And you come back into, self-resonance. You begin to resonate with your own energy field and you perceive it differently. and it's not blocked out. That's, I think.
Blocking. That's exactly what the electricity stuff does. I've noticed my partner and I were able to live on a remote island off of Tasmania. We stayed there for about 3.5 months. And this is like, there is no electricity at all. It's not off the grid. There was just no electricity. There was one tiny little solar panel about 12 centimeters across that could power a transistor radio. And other than that, if we wanted any power, we could turn on the generator, but we never did. We'd go into the little town once every week or two and charge our camera batteries and go online. But we were able to, you know, and this is the real environment in which life evolved on this planet for billions of years, but without electricity and all this stuff. And you really feel, you become so much more sensitive. Your body is like an antenna for all these vibrations and the feelings of your fellow beings, and you can just sense things and think clearly. And and to me, that's really how we're meant to live. And then I noticed that when you really change when you stay like that, and then when you have to go back into the city, it's like you're attacked by all these energy fields and vibrations and stuff, and then you kind of calibrate after a couple of days. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
You fall into the background noise once again. That's the problem. As you fall into it and you begin to ignore it, and yet it's still there. And to overcome it, you can, but it requires some kind of awareness of it. You have to pay attention, and most people don't pay attention. They lose attention really rapidly and fall into it again pretty rapidly. That's the challenge. Here's my challenge to listeners who are listening to this today, is take the time to really evaluate the choices that you make every day. Just start making a list of the choices you make, if nothing else. and start to think about whether you can make other ones. And I challenge you on that.
Wall, and you're listening to UCY.